This podcast is brought to you by Link, simply the best way to learn languages. After you listen to the podcast, sign up for a free account at Link, LINGQ.com, and study the full transcript using Link's revolutionary learning tools. Hello and welcome back to English Link for another podcast from sunny Vancouver.
It sure is sunny. Hello. It's wonderful. It's what, 25 to 30 degrees centigrade?
Yeah, today it's the warmest day of the year for sure. It could end up being the warmest day of the year, period.
Well, it can. I mean, here in Vancouver, between May and September, you get three glorious months and two bad months. And it can literally be any month, it seems. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can remember 1st of July, terrible conditions. Mm-hmm. I guess August is normally the best month.
Yeah.
I think so.
In general, mid-July to mid-August is the most guaranteed weather.
And the weather is so warm, and yet here we are, sort of the Canadian sporting event of the year, the Stanley Cup playoffs, although both of the teams are in the United States. Mm-hmm. But there's more interest in Canada than there is in the United States. Mm-hmm. And it's exciting to watch. It takes forever. I guess they have to make enough money to pay all these high salaries to people, so they drag the season out for... I mean, it is ridiculous to be playing hockey in June.
It is ridiculous to be playing. I guess the owners make all their money in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So they have their budgets set so that the players' salaries are all paid by the end of the year. And if the teams do well in the playoffs, the owners make money. Mm-hmm. And the players want to be paid a lot of money, and the owners therefore need to make that money. So they have, as you say, a lot of games they play over the course of the season. So by the time the playoffs start in mid-April... and the playoffs go on for a long time.
Right. So you have to kind of close the curtains, shut out the sunlight, turn on the air conditioning if you have it.
That's right.
And pretend it's winter. But there's been some exciting games, and it's interesting to see sometimes that the some of the sort of unsung heroes or the journeyman players, players who have been around a long time, who don't get a lot of publicity, have been producing. Mm-hmm. And some of the younger players that don't get a lot of publicity. And the big stars have also been producing, but they haven't been as dominant. It's fun to see some of these other players really come through. Mm-hmm. Like Maxime Talbot last night was outstanding. He was definitely the best player there. And he probably earns one-tenth, maybe not one-tenth, but a third of what Crosby and Malkin and these people make.
You know, it's a team game, and on any given night, anyone can be the hero. And especially in the playoffs, when the other team's best defensive players are concentrating on stopping the opposition's best offensive players, very often it's someone else who kind of sneaks through and finds a little open ice, because it gets pretty tight checking out there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more opportunity to do good things offensively during the season than during the playoffs, where everybody's trying that much harder.
For sure. But to me it's the most exciting game. I know for most people in the world soccer is the number one game, but for us hockey is the most exciting game, and I think in certain countries in the world, like Sweden, Finland, Czech Republic, Russia, certain areas of the United States. This is the biggest game. Latvia is another country where it's
big. Switzerland is quite popular, too.
So it's a phenomenal game, and a very international game. Mm-hmm. Certainly the teams in the finals, you've got players from every country. Mm-hmm. Sweden, Finland, Czechs, Russians, Canadians, Americans. Maybe I've left some out.
Right.
And, you know, just to digress to language learning for a second, all those players speak English and speak English well. Mm-hmm. And I always find it annoying when people say that language learning is a matter of aptitude. I just don't believe that. There are all kinds of figures. I was listening in Russian to the story of a famous Polish queen who was actually Hungarian and who was made a saint by Pope John Paul some while ago. But she spoke four languages. And the people in the courts of Europe spoke four or five languages. Mm-hmm. Don't tell me that just those people who were born in the courts of Europe had a natural aptitude for language learning.
Well, and as you often point out, I mean, everyone in Sweden basically speaks English.
Right.
I mean, they had on, during the hockey game last night, they had Don Cherry, who's the Canadian cultural icon, who does the who's got a segment between periods during the hockey games on Hockey Night in Canada, which is the broadcaster of hockey games. Anyway, he every year at this time, he introduces the top five or six or whatever it is, prospects that are coming up. The top, I think it was the top six most highly ranked prospects in the upcoming entry draft. And of the six, one was from Sweden. I can't remember his name. Victor Hedman or something like that. At any rate, you know, the other four guys are Canadian, and they do their thing. Say, you know, I'm so-and-so. I played here. I was coached by so-and-so. My favorite player is whoever. And then the Swedish guy goes, and that's unbelievable. Like, he's a, whatever, he's a 16, 17-year-old Swede, and he would just, no problem, on national TV, in fluent English.
And I don't believe that all the Swedes
all his life
have a special gene that makes them good language learners.
Right.
I don't believe in this aptitude thing.
No.
People in the United States, because they speak English and they consider English as good enough, and in Canada, Anglophone Canadians are no better.
No better.
Don't learn languages well.
Right.
And in smaller countries or in certain circumstances, I mean, in Russia, in the 19th century, the aristocracy all spoke French.
Right.
And Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly German and English.
Right.
And it was normal. And it was no big deal. And they all did it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they had any special aptitude that somehow other populations don't have. So it's fun to see those international, those players, how they all get along. I mean, they're all part of the team. Mm-hmm. They're all, it doesn't matter where they're from. It's kind of fun to see that.
Well, and many of you may have heard this theme before, but we've talked about university professors who foreign university professors here, for example, who don't speak English very well.
No,
they probably worked here for 20 years, and that's whereas these hockey players come over, and if they don't speak English when they get here, they pick it up pretty quickly. And
now you could say it's opportunity, but it's also attitude. Mm-hmm. It's also attitude. It's that. But, you know, I was watching, we were both watching an interview with President Obama of the United States, first interview with French television.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's not reasonable to expect the President of the United States to speak a foreign language, I guess.
Right.
I guess. But we expect that the President of, or Chancellor of Germany, or the Prime Minister of France, or all these other people can speak at least one other language. I gather Chancellor Merkel can speak Russian as well as English. It would be nice if the President of the United States could speak Spanish or French or Chinese or some other language.
Well, I have a call into him.
Get him on link.
Get him on link. I know a way he can do it.
Right. It needn't cost a lot of money because he doesn't have the funds.
Him and 100,000 of his closest friends.
Right.
We'll put them on for a discount.
But you know, it's interesting. Mr. Obama was saying that he said the United States is one of the largest Muslim countries in the world.
You know, I heard that, and I kind of.
But we checked it up on Figo. That's what he said. Like, so, is there a million? Are there a million and a half Muslims in the United States? Maybe.
I know.
Maybe. So let's compare that. Like, one of the largest Muslim countries in the world.
I mean
Russia is the largest country by area.
Right.
It has, I don't know, 20 million Muslims.
Right.
So how about France? It's probably 10% Muslim.
Yeah.
That's going to the real Muslim countries like, well, India is the largest by population.
Right.
Indonesia, Pakistan, Egypt.
Bangladesh.
Saudi Arabia, Turkey, 60, 70, 80 million people. What's he talking about?
I have no idea.
China.
Mean, France and Britain have more Muslims than than the U.S. That was a strange thing to say. I mean, I can understand trying to curry favor with the Muslims. I guess that's what he's after. Not that I think it's going to do him much good, but, I mean, that's just simply not true.
No, it's just but it's amazing the sort of ignorance. You know, I have to mention when we're talking about ignorance, I listened to my Russian radio station, Echo Moskvy, and there are two things there that are quite interesting. One is the Russian government has appointed a committee, and the title of the committee is Committee to Investigate the Falsification of History that is damaging to the interests of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
That's the name of the committee. It's not a committee on history. Let's
see
what's out there.
Yeah.
Not a committee to exchange information with other countries. not a committee for objectivity in history. It's a committee to identify the falsification of history that is harmful to the interests of the Russian state.
Right.
Now, what is that? That is purely how are we going to rewrite history? Anyway, but
that takes place here. All the do-gooder left-wing types trying to rewrite the history and paint the West as a demon or downplay our role in any
you know what? I don't mind
wars or
there could be 10 different textbooks and they say different things and maybe they're largely influenced one way or another. I prefer that to the state saying we will police it so that nothing is written that is harmful to the interests of the state. In other words, either you're pushing for objectivity or you're pushing for, and what I would most like to see, a variety of points of view.
Yeah, but I guess you don't get a variety. That's my point. There is no variety.
Right.
All the teachers come from the same teachers' colleges, from the same unions,
right,
where there's one way of thinking. This
right.
This is how it is, and this is how the textbooks have
okay,
to write.
But let's see. We've been on that theme before. But let's look at the other perspective, which is what happens in Russia. So I was listening to a radio interview with this lady who is from the Duma, which is the Russian parliament. And she is the deputy leader of the second largest fraction, which is basically supports Putin, but it's some kind of a mixture of nationalists and communists. And it's called the Just Russia Party. And the issue is that in Portugal, there was a Russian woman who had a child and couldn't look after the child. So the child was raised by this Portuguese family who were sort of guardians and raised the child for 6 years in Portugal. And then the mother wanted the child back. And so the Portuguese court ruled that the mother should have the child back because the child, in fact, was not put up for adoption by this Portuguese family. Mm-hmm. The Portuguese family was just looking after it. So then this girl goes back to Russia, and there's some question about whether the mother was a suitable mother and blah, blah, blah. So there's lots of discussion about pros and cons. Should a child always go to the natural mother and so forth and so on? But what was very interesting was this woman, who is typical of the attitude that seems to come out of the Russian Duma and the governing circles in Russia, one of her main points was, Americans come to Russia and adopt children. And apparently there's been like 55,000 Russian children adopted by American families.
Right.
And she says they go around the world adopting families. Adopting children. What is their purpose? Are they trying to recruit soldiers for their upcoming wars? That was her comment. I mean, to attribute. Now, the fact that the Canadians and the Irish and the Australians and the Swedes all adopt internationally to a similar extent as the Americans.
I think the bigger issue would be why are there so many Russian kids up for adoption?
Well, they recognize there are lots of social problems in Russia. But to attribute these kinds of motives, I mean, the Americans have to be pretty, pretty long-term thinking to be planning now for the army 20 years from now. And, of course, they're not the only ones who do this. And
right.
Yeah, it's a whole social issue. I mean, I can see if Canada were a poor country, and let's say for this, Japan or China were rich, and every year there's thousands of Canadian kids that are put up for adoption and taken elsewhere to be raised there when our population is declining, I would not be very happy with that situation. But I wouldn't necessarily assume that it's because the Japanese want to fill their armed forces with Canadian children.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing what people come up with.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
For sure.
Yeah. But getting back to Barack Obama, he's a sophisticated guy. If he did an interview, if he could do an interview in French or in Spanish.
Yeah, but I guess Spanish would be of more use to relevance in the States. French,
not necessarily French.
No.
Unless
out of interest.
Right.
We don't really care what language he learns as long as he does it on link and tells everybody.
That too. But I think it alters your perspective, just even knowing one other language. I don't want to get, carried away with this thing, but it shows that you've made an effort to try to learn a little bit about another culture.
I don't know.
No?
I mean, some people like learning languages, some people
don't.
Maybe you're right. I don't think it has any bearing on whether you're a good you'd make a good president or not. I'm sure there's lots of people that speak many languages that you wouldn't want as president.
This is true. You wouldn't want me, that's for sure.
You know?
Right. So what do you think of the economic crisis then? Do you think we're starting to see a few more positive indicators?
Seems to be. The stock markets seem to have recovered much of what they lost, which is an encouraging sign. I believe that the stock market's a leading indicator. The stock market tends to recover before
It tends to be a predictor.
It tends to drop. It tends to precede recessions, and it tends to signal recoveries. So,
it's interesting. You have those indicators or those economic statistics which tell us what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've seen, for example, the sale of existing homes in the United States rose by some tremendous number, the largest year-to-year increase from May of 2008 to May of 2009 was the largest year-to-year increase in like 10 years or something.
Wow.
So that's a very significant number.
Yeah.
Certainly the stock market indicates people's attitudes, anticipations.
Right.
Then there was the Conference Board of Canada, which is a leading economic think tank, did a survey which showed that Canadians are more optimistic about the future now than they have been in a long, for years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's again shows the mood. Right. And of course, it's the mood that drives all
this
stuff.
It's the mood that drives it all because, I mean, I saw another statistic that said that I think the number of foreclosures in the States or something had gone up, in fact, recently. Was the highest on record or a big jump. I can't remember exactly the statistic, but it was a statistic that a year ago would have caused people to panic or at least caused a negative reaction.
Right.
And it seems to have just kind of gone by. The general sentiment seems to be on the positive these days.
Well, there's several things there. First of all, some of those bad debts and people who can't afford to live in their homes and that, they got to be cleared out somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't fully understand. Maybe getting all of those foreclosures out of the way is a good thing. I don't know. Obviously, the fact that people are buying more homes might be because the homes are so cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody took a tremendous beating on those homes.
Right.
But
again, as you say, it's mostly the sentiment that we're worried about.
Right.
I mean, there are always people making money. Every time someone's losing money, someone else is making money. So all those people that took a bath on the mortgage, whether they invested in those mortgage-backed securities or had to foreclose on their mortgage, I mean, they lost money, but someone else made that money.
Well, someone's going to walk in there. Someone who was prudent with their money is going to walk in there and buy the house at 60% of the value.
Exactly. So I guess – but my point is that it's not like that money's disappearing and nobody's earning any money. Some people are. Throughout the crisis, some people were making money,
right?
But it was more the sentiment that people thought, "Oh,
right."
Things are
but
going
I mean,
into the
yeah. But if
tank.
The overall the value of people's homes declines, and overall the value of stocks on the stock market declines, then people have less money.
Right.
Their net worth declines
for sure,
and therefore they say, "I don't have as much money as I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go to Hawaii. I'm not going to buy a car. I'm not going to buy this and that."
Right.
And it all tends to spiral down.
That's true. Yeah.
And so it's when people start feeling more positive, they buy stuff, and then people start getting employed. And I think just to see that the increase of the number of unemployed is declining.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas it's a 7, whatever it was, you know, like a 10% increase in unemployment, then it's an 8% increase. It's still an increase, but it's less of an increase than the previous month. So that comes up as a positive indicator.
Right.
You know? But, yeah.
Well, people have to start spending money and helping to turn the economy around because someone has to pay for all the money the governments are forking out.
Well, that's right. It's going to be with the amount of money they're spending. If we have sustained low growth, then the burden, the deficit burden, is going to be horrendous.
I know. I mean, to me, I just don't.
I think it's wrong.
All this money they're forking out to.
But maybe first of all, they may not spend it all.
Right.
And perhaps the feeling was that they had to, you know, appear to be doing something, that this was all part of getting people to feel a little more confident about the future.
Right.
But
I mean, I guess if things turn around here and the positive momentum continues, maybe they'll come out smelling like a rose.
Right.
But we'll have to see.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sure an awful lot of money.
Especially for this General Motors buyout. And in Canada,
and
the
in
same
Canada
on a per capita basis.
Yeah.
It's the same. Whereas the forest industry that I'm interested in continue. I mean, far more people out of work.
Right.
Nothing. no help for them.
Well, that's the thing. The thing that bugs me the most, I guess, about these handouts is that, you know, why are you handpicking industries to support and letting others fail? That you're taking money from some industries and giving it to others. I mean, that's just not right.
No.
Either you give money to all industries, which should take the form of a tax cut,
including Link.
Including Link.
Right.
Or don't give them. You can't handpick. It's just not right. But I mean, that's what governments do. They're buying votes. That's unfortunately the case.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I think
there
that's
it is. That's our run for the day. We do appreciate any feedback. We don't get a lot. If we'd like some arguments, get some people to phone in or tell us we're stupid. We can take it.
Don't just turn us off. Yeah. Tell us we're stupid and tell us why.
Tell us something we don't know.
Okay, we'll talk to you next time.
Bye for now.